Summer may be brief, but the Taos News can help you savor your fun in the sun. Share a photo of your summertime adventures on taosnews.com for a chance to win great prizes. We have weekly prizes from Taos Burger Stand. We also have a first prize gift card to Taos Tack and Feed and a grand prize grill from Rio Grande Ace Hardware. Head to taosnews.com to learn more. Welcome to Voices of Taos. My name is Laura Martin-Baseman, and I'm the producer of this podcast from the Taos News. Every week, we will be bringing you a voice from our Taos community. Welcome to Voices of Taos. This week, we have Sandy Campbell, who is the director of True Kids One, a youth media and technology education nonprofit based here in Taos. And Sandy, you've been with the organization since 2021, is that correct?
That is correct.
Awesome. So can you just give us and our listeners a brief background on True Kids One, as well as, you know, what they do and maybe the ages of kids and kind of what projects they work on?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. And let me see, there's a lot to unpack in that simple question. So I guess as a nonprofit, we started in earnest in 2017, really as a youth media nonprofit. The pandemic came along, and I think like a lot of organizations, it was sort of a moment of doing some rejigging and rewiring ultimately. So I came in July 2021, and, you know, schools were still closed then, and we didn't really know what our programming was going to be. We just knew that in the field of media, which was all we were looking at that time, that we have a generation of kids who just went through the pandemic's, you know, media saturation moments and moments and moments. And it was really obvious that we had to do a lot of things when it comes to media. So I guess the first big question was, well, what in the world do we do in the field of media? And I think we kind of landed on this place of, well, we have to help our kids. And by kids, I mean kind of like 10, 11 and older. Really before then, the media lights aren't necessarily on as brightly. But really starting that age, we need to help them understand what the whole media world is. How does it all work? How do you make money when you're visiting, when you're on Snapchat? How is Snapchat worth $12.4 billion? How does that happen? And so ultimately, to get at some of these media literacy questions, not let alone all the fake news and disinformation issues too, but to get at those kinds of issues, we found that the best place to start was give kids cameras. Let them experiment. Let them make some media, because when you start making media, then you start getting into the thick of some of these thorny questions we still face in the world of media, such as, you know, what is truth? Such as, you know, what is profitability? Such as, how do we know what we're watching or listening to is accurate? There's so many different issues. And ultimately, we kind of landed on this media production for media literacy model, which we still very much pursue. The more we get kids in cameras' hands, the more we get them editing, the more they have the ability to be intelligent about the media-infused world that they currently live in. So I have two teenagers, 14 and 15-year-old. They give me lots of insight into how this generation consumes media. And, you know, I'm pretty concerned by the things that I see. You know, I see groups of kids who are, you know, teenagers having a good time, but instead of using their words to talk about a funny experience, instead of, you know, connecting in the ways that you and I may have connected when we were that age, they really connect over and via their phones. Hey, look at this photo I took of myself. Hey, look at this meme I found online. Hey, look at this. It's amazing. And, you know, so I've had lots of different windows into seeing groups of 13, 14, 15, 16-year-olds kind of, you know, sit around various different phones. And that's really tricky. It's really concerning. So that series of concerns kind of led to our next big program area, which is called Kids, Screens, and Phones, and which is all about how in the world do we start educating this very different breed of humanity, these very different humans who went through a core part of their life when the world was shut down and media was really the only thing that they had. How do we help them arrive at a place of balance, responsibility, safety, and creativity? You know, we know phones are not going away anytime soon. They're wonderful Swiss Army knives. They do all kinds of things. And our motto or our credo can't be put them away, put them down. That can work in some settings. But the real challenge is saying, how are you going to live your life in a way that's full, that these phones play a part of, but are not the central focus of, and that you don't have an addictive relationship with? Very difficult. So if our first program area is and still is very much media production for media literacy, the second is really looking at kids' screens and phones, that balance ultimately. And our third program area we brought in really just a year ago, and it's about technology. So obviously our children today are growing up intertwined with technology, as humans always have, but they're growing up intertwined with technology in a different way than previous breeds of humans have. Or previous generations of humans have, let me say. And so, again, let's bring them behind the curtain a little bit. Let's get them coding. Let's help them understand the basics of electronics. Let's help them do some pretty cool stuff with drones, which, by the way, are one of the most interesting pieces of technology that have been invented in quite a long time.
For sure. Yeah, I find their noise aggravating, but I love the things that they do.
Yeah, they can see things that we can't see. They see things that there's no possible way for human beings to see unless we're in an airplane. They're quite extraordinary. But, you know, they can be programmed, just like robots can be programmed. And so we have a growing cohort of kids, mostly boys. And for any girls listening or parents of girls, we want your children. You know, we want balance in our programming too.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're trying to basically help them get into hardware. So let's take apart this iPad and see what it's like. Let's take apart this iPhone. Let's take apart these computers and then put them back together again. Or let's take, you know, we always take donations of old computers. We have tons of them. Because even in a 10-year-old computer, it's got some pretty fancy parts. And so we can pull them apart, take the memory chips out, take the stuff out. And then, you know, poke around with them, put them back together again and build something else. And that's pretty exciting. So, and maybe I'll just draw my opening remarks to a close by saying this. By us really zeroing in on media and on STEM with a particular focus on technology, we do two things that really aren't being done in sufficient measure in our school system here. It doesn't matter whether it's a district school or a charter school. These are the two areas that are hard to teach. Yeah. You need the right instructors who are trained up. In today's technology, you need tools and resources. And one of the things that's so hard for any school or school district is you need so many bloody cables to make stuff work. And if you need a $6 cable you can get on Amazon, well, the layers of approval you need to get to order that become a little bit too onerous. And for us as a nonprofit, we can be very nimble. And, you know, we're buying stuff constantly because ultimately, if you're going to teach media and you're going to teach technology, you must have really good tools at your disposal to make those things happen. So that's a general statement. There's more to say, like our headquarters space, and, you know, we have all kinds of more things to say, but that's sort of a general sort of programmatic entry to who we are and what we do.
Yeah, and I think the other important thing is that talking about the resources that are in a local community, being able to offer that to kids not only for their literacy, but also in a way that when they get to college, if they go, or if they go into a different form of career, this stuff is essential. And yeah, being able to take it down to the nuts and bolts of how things work is so cool that there's even an opportunity to do that here. I grew up in Santa Fe, and I would have killed for a program like that when I was a kid, for sure. So
it's one of the best compliments that I've heard, and you're not the first to say it, and I love it. You know,
yeah.
Boy, if we had these kinds of things available to us when we were growing up, you know, it's key and important stuff. And to pick up on what you said around career and college readiness, it's a huge part of what we do. And so part of it is helping kids understand. And I talk to them pretty frankly sometimes and then connect them to the Bridges Project for Education too, amongst others, of like, you should be getting a scholarship. There's lots of possibilities for you. And like, let's expand your ideas of what's possible for you when it comes to college. And then, of course, there's a huge swath of kids here who aren't going to go to college. It's not the right fit for them.
Totally.
And that's A-okay.
Totally.
And ultimately what we can do is via media, we can emphasize, here are some of the skilled trades, for example. Here are some of the pathways within the skilled trades that get you towards, you know, a $100,000 a year job. And we're really working on developing with some of the area's major employers an idea of what kinds of skills they're looking for in an entry-level position, and then ensuring that our programs, especially our STEM programs, teach to those competencies. And it may seem obvious, but that kind of stuff doesn't really happen here. And it feels like for a big chunk of high school students to be able to go to them and say, instead of you working a service job, and I don't mean to be necessarily negative in that domain, but instead of working a service job, how about you look at a career at Kit Carson or at Taos County or at the Ski Valley? And here are some of the competencies, some of the specific computer skills, some of the routing and networking skills that you need, and now we're going to help you get there. And okay. We're going to spend 2 or 3 years to help you get there, but really when you graduate high school, you're ready to do something that's not only a need that we have here, but it's also going to generate you some income that's going to take you, you know, a good long way in this world.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that multiple generations of New Mexicans can kind of talk about is just the brain drain that we have here, not just for college educated people, but even professional careers that don't need a college level education. We don't have a lot of people straying around and being professionals. So that's really cool, being able to tie people in with local organizations. So, I mean, honestly, being a third generation newspaper kid, this is one of my favorite topics. I just find this so interesting. So I'm going to try and stay, you know, centered here so we can actually talk about what the kids are actually doing. So we have Angie Burns Diaz and Carlos Miller coming on in a couple of weeks to talk about a project they did about the Gorge Bridge and suicides. What are some other projects that are kind of being done by these young people? And I guess because I work for a newspaper, are you guys doing any print media or is everything focused on kind of video and audio stuff?
Yeah. So there's a lot there too.
Yep.
So journalism is such an important thing. And yet really none of our kids read any journalism anymore.
Yep.
All of the journalism that they consume is via clips on social media. And so what we've been trying to do is help them, again, do some news pieces, and in so doing some news pieces, understand how the news works, understand how the news business works, start reading the paper. You know, we have our youth council, whenever we meet, we often go through the Taos News and look at stories that we might want to cover. And one of the things, well, two things that we're doing specifically around journalism, one is our newscast, which we did 6 episodes of last year. They're great fun.
They are fantastic, too.
They're super fun.
The quality production is just awesome. So good on the whole team involved.
Yeah, from script development to figuring out all the little segments that we're going to produce in addition to what we do against our green screen and our anchors. And special shout out to Kalila Koh, who's a rising senior at Taos High. I mean, she's just been the driving engine at not only the content and delivery of the content, but then editing it and putting it all together. Not an insignificant amount of work, and she's done just a wonderful job with it. So getting the newscast rolling has been fantastic because of a few things. One, there's no way for students to have a voice in this world. The adults here may talk a big game about youth voice, but it really doesn't happen. They really don't solicit the opinions. There are some exceptions, but in general, that doesn't happen. Secondly, there's no student council or student newspaper at Taos High. So in many senses, the news for students sometimes is about blowing off some hot air of like stuff that's bugging them. You know, ultimately, hopefully, just giving some constructive feedback. We are your major customers and clients. This is how we are receiving this service put forward, and these are the kinds of changes we'd like to have. With our newscasts, we don't point fingers. We like to just talk about things. You know, one of our beliefs is that this town does not do a good job of naming its problems and therefore does not do a good job at solving its problems. And we want this newscast to be a way of saying, here's some things that we could do better on. You know, we're all trying our best. There's no doubt about it. But ultimately, sometimes we have to reflect and we have to listen to. Not always and not every word of, because they're still 16 and 17 and they're still figuring out their world and their place in it. But they have important, interesting things to say. So that's one. And then the second piece, and really Angie is going to help drive this forward, and Carlos has certainly done some work on this too, we want to help create multimedia pieces. So the Taos News is going to do a piece on, well, let me give you an example. It's a bad example, but it's a good illustration. So a year ago or so, there was that shooting in Cuesta when a 14-year-old shot a 13-year-old, And Carlos went to Cuesta to capture the vigil, and he captured the, just people in deep grief and pain and loss, and then also the vigil itself. He then produced that overnight, and then we posted it onto the Taos News website inside the story that was about the vigil. And that, to me, feels pretty exciting because, obviously, the Taos News is almost entirely print, and this adds another dimension to the reporting. And I think as importantly as anything else, if we want our kids involved in this public domain, they're not going to read the paper. They're not going to read, period. And you can give me exceptions to that, but we all know that what I'm saying is right. So if we can give them video as an opportunity to reflect, to report on the story as they see it, that's how they themselves will consume that information. And so if we can keep that ball in the air, we'll have all kinds of different stories being told in video that reaches them in the channels they're already on and then connects with them in the storytelling manner that now they're quite used to.
Totally. I think one of the reasons that we even started this podcast, for example, is one of my concerns of just changing media consumption across generations.
Right.
And as a millennial, I know that my peers, we do read still, you know, but we're also doing TikTok. We're also doing Instagram. But I know a lot of my peers love podcasts for their news. And also it's a way of, you know, you can multitask while you're listening to a podcast.
Sure.
And so I think one of the important things that you all are considering and that I hope the Taos News and hopefully the New Mexican, if we can figure out the right partners, is to figure out how to get those other aspects of journalism, not just produced by young people, but also consumed by young people as a trusted source. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the New Mexican is celebrating its 175th year Wow. this year as a pretty much, for the most part, independent newspaper organization. We won't talk about that little time owned by Gannett. But the point being is that if we can build that trust into a new medium that people can enjoy consuming, but also produce content for,
Right.
I think it would be really important. There's a lot of newspaper conferences where they talk about how horrible it is that people aren't reading and stuff. It's just a fact, you know, and people change the way they consume media as they age
That's
as
right.
well. So it's just,
And sort of bemoaning it in some ways, which, you know, I'll be the first to do.
Yeah.
It's also an understanding that things change.
Absolutely.
Humanity's constantly changing. And, you know, I do force our children, our kids and our programs to read. Books, and I'll say things like, hey, guess what? Every smart person since the beginning of humanity's done. And they'll look at me blankly and I'll say, they've read. They read books. But, you know, instead of bemoaning that the reading isn't happening at the same level, it's sort of like, well, let's maybe double down on where they're at and what they are doing and make what they're doing better, more content rich, more nutrient dense, and, you know, hit them where they're at already.
Totally. And I think there's a way of doing multimedia things, like things being able to build in, like you said about that print story last year that was able to incorporate the visual media. Mm-hmm. I think those are just perfect matches. So,
yeah. Yeah. And when we can find demand for that stuff, too, it's super important. You know, the Angie, really is Angie spearheading the documentary about the Gorge Bridge and really asking the big question, how can we turn the bridge into a place that can hold anyone who arrives there, especially those in mental or spiritual crisis. You know, that came about because of work that the county, the town, the state are interested in leading, which is we know we have to update the Gorge Bridge. So what do you guys, what do you teenagers think about it? And that's pretty cool. And the more kind of requests along those lines of complicated subjects. The Gorge Bridge is not a straightforward slam dunk of an issue. Build railings and we're done. There's a lot more to it. And so we all know that to begin with, but how can we help bring to the fore youth voice and concerns that might be the missing ingredient in pushing something to the right place, to the right conclusion?
And I think also things like, you know, suicide and mental health, which have been a huge effect on especially teens and young people who had to go through the pandemic, it's top of their mind, you know. And I think for teenagers generally, I remember when I worked for the New Mexican, when I was a teen, I worked for their Generation Next newspaper mm-hmm. page. I wrote an article, a multi-series article about suicides in Santa Fe for the same reason. I had friends who were struggling with mental health. And I think it's, as you said in the beginning of the conversation, it's unfortunate if the teens and just young people in general aren't considered as full members of our community.
That's right. And members who need to be heard from on particular issues especially. And I think mental health, you know, we are definitely in a very thick moment around mental health in our teenagers in particular. And we're not going to solve this from above. We're going to solve this by getting in there and hearing from them and knowing what their concerns are, understanding what social media has become, understanding video games and the world of all of that, so that, you know, we can have informed, intelligent conversations on their level and with the things that they themselves are wrestling with. And I think the part of their existence that is very hard to grapple with is they're growing up in public. Anything they do can be filmed, often is, and they may not even know it. And that's just one aspect of all this. And, you know, you're a student at Taos High, you're one sort of false step away, and you may not even make that step yourself from being completely dragged through the mud on social media, and, you know, thousands of people can see whatever comment is made within a second of it being made. That's a very different reality from what we grew up with, and I can see how that kind of context can lead people down some pretty dark roads.
Absolutely. And it's something, too, that it doesn't even matter if you prevent your kid from being on social media. The fact is that they can still get bullied. They can still get harassed on those platforms. So it's kind of like, as you discussed before, just limiting people's access isn't necessarily the only solution to things. Yeah.
Well, we need the government. We need the state to step in and offer up some regulations when it comes to social media. We have talked to a couple of our state representatives on this. I know that the receptivity is there. And I think one of the best solutions I've seen came from another state, and I'm blanking on which one it was, that basically said we are going to only accept certain kinds of algorithms serving up content to those under the age of 16.
Totally.
And that sounds right.
Cool. That's very interesting, because I was just about to ask you about the new health recommendation by the
Surgeon General.
Thank you. By the Surgeon General. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, wow. If we can draw the straight line to the Surgeon General's report on cigarettes and tobacco, that would be a wonderful thing if that can lead us forward. I think ultimately, this is a complicated and tricky issue, and there's a lot of money at stake. More money, I would argue, than, you know, whatever the tobacco companies were making in their heyday. Maybe not, but enough money that there are going to be very serious changes pushing against it. That said, we live in a very blue democratic state. We have a very sort of open public discourse on these kinds of things. I'm surprised that we're not a little bit more advanced in terms of the regulation we're discussing, because we know these things take time. But I'm certainly optimistic that we can spring forward with Surgeon General's recommendations, with some of the things we're learning about Mark Zuckerberg and the decisions that were made at the highest levels of Meta, you know, formerly Facebook, but now that owns and controls Instagram, which is by far the biggest channel that our children are all on. You know, and the more we learn about some of this background stuff, the more we learn about and have research showing, you know, evidence that links, you know, social media content with negative mental health outcomes, it just feels like a matter of time before the right thing comes along. I think at the end of the day, we're at a place still where a significant burden falls on parents to do the right things with their kids. We have done lots of thinking on this. We've held some parent forums in different places, and I think now I'm reducing everything as we do in this internet age to sort of one soundbite, which is this: all parents must check in their child's device into their room up until they're 18, period. Because we know from science, we know from experience, we know from seeing in our own kids that when kids have access to devices in their rooms by themselves, they could be up all night long on YouTube Shorts. They could be all night long comparing themselves to photographs of, you know, some other kid. Who knows? But ultimately, the internet is the portal to the adult world, the crazy adult world, and we have to shape how and when, especially, our children can access that.
Great recommendation. And also a challenging one, I'm sure. Well, yeah. How do you start that conversation with your teen? For example, like if you have allowed them to do this, but you know things have kind of gotten out of control, they're not doing their homework, they're not, you know, really engaging maybe even with friends or activities they used to do. What do you recommend?
I think every family's different, obviously.
Of course.
You know, what we do in our family is we have pretty strong parental controls in terms of how much time can be spent on different apps. Summer, of course, is a bit different because there's a lot more free time. But, you know, set those limits and then, you know, and our kids used to push back against it. But every night before they go to bed, it has to be checked in into our room, not in the kitchen, not in the living room. It's in our room. Oh, you want to charge it, plug it in? Wonderful. There's a plug for you. I think ultimately we parents pay the bills. And that has to give us the right leverage. I'm delighted you love your phone or your iPad or your whatever so much. That's great. Guess what? It's not staying in your room overnight, and it's not a conversation, so thank you.
Yeah. Strong parenting. Sounds great.
Yeah, within a frame of open communication.
Absolutely.
But I think that's the one place to start, and it's just got to be inflexible. You don't sleep with your device. Thank you.
Totally. Well, that's super helpful. Next question. So if someone knew a young person who's interested in getting involved in True Kids One, how do they do that?
Sure. Well, so we really specialize in teaching 16 to 20-year-olds. And there's a few reasons for that. But our headquarters space, which is just north of Albertsons, tucked into La Posa Plaza, you know, we have lots of stuff there. And ultimately, we find our instructors, our mentors, our best place when we're dealing with the stories, the realities, the pressures, and so on of, you know, sort of the 16, maybe 15 and over crowd. We have summer camps right now, and that's for 10 to 14-year-olds. It's just a very different deal. It's a very different type of kid, and that's wonderful. So really, we serve that 10 to 14-year-old age group in the summertime. We have our website has all our summer camps. I would say for anyone interested or any student interested, they should be signing up for our mailing list so they'll get announcements of this stuff. And then ideally, students just come by our headquarters space. They're interested, come by. We've had many kids drop in this year, and now we're a 5-minute walk from the high school. There's no excuse. We want kids to just come in, say hello, and say, I'm interested in this, or I'm interested in that, or I'm doing a school project in this. Can you guys help me do that? And, you know, and the cool thing is we have a bunch of different grants that help us do things like we serve food all day long. So come in hungry. That's great. We've got lots of food to feed you with. You know, we have a brand new Suburban to drive kids around. We take kids to and from their homes. You know, we can't really take kids to and from their homes if they live in Red River. But, you know, we figure things out because we know that transportation can be a real barrier. We know food can be a real barrier. And the other thing we know is a real barrier for a lot of kids in this group is they need to make money. So we have a pretty big internship or mentorship or apprenticeship program that essentially rewards kids for showing up and learning and ideally contributing to a lot of the projects we have on the go or have their own projects that they really want to take forward. So right now we have probably 40 kids, 45 kids that come to our HQ at least once a week during the school year. We have some kids who come every day at some point during the school, during the school day they come in. So we have a lot of kids coming in. So we've got space for more. If the kids are interested, they should either drop us a line by email or phone or just come by. What I really don't like is when their parents reach out on their behalf. I know that we all do that, we're parents, but I really like it when students show up and say, hey.
Totally. I think that's essential, and nothing's cooler than doing a project on your own that doesn't involve your parental units.
So, yeah. Right.
So great. Well, thank you so much, Sandy, for being on Voices of Taos. We appreciate the work you're doing in the community, and we're also, I think, excited to be partners with y'all. And we can say that we have multiple newspaper people from the Taos News and the New Mexican who are on the boards of True Kids One. And yeah, we're so glad you're a part of our community.
Awesome. Thanks. Yeah, special shout out to Chris Baker, who's the publisher of Taos News on our board. And of course, Inez Ross, who is the editorial page editor at the New Mexican, is on our board and is an amazing person too.
Thank you for joining us for Voices of Taos, a podcast by the Taos News, produced by Laura Martin Baseman. Our music was produced and arranged by Miles Bonney, featuring musicians Francisco Velarde, Ruben Hernandez, and Margot Macias. Please join us next week for another episode of Voices of Taos.